I'm your host, Sully. We got the one, the only author, Anne Hillerman, is on tonight to talk about her career as well as her upcoming project. Welcome.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, first off, we were catching up off air and it was just wild. You're just describing some of the weather in Tucson, Arizona, and how that's changing there. I feel you on that because just so many other states are just, you know, nationwide are experiencing just unusual, you know, weather.
Yeah, I know we've been lucky here in Tucson. It's been lots of moisture, but not too cold, just really lovely. Santa Fe, where I also live, has had more snow than I can remember in a long time. In fact, the ski area there is going to be open an extra couple of weeks because they've had so much snow. And on the Navajo Nation, it's been a lot of the roads have turned to mud. It's kind of a mixed blessing. It's great to have the moisture, but it creates problems for, you know, for so many people who live rurally who don't have, you know, ways to deal with it. So.
Exactly.
There's always something with weather, huh?
Mm-hmm. Altogether, just backtracking a little bit. What would you say right now? You're already published over 7 novels, and you've just been steadily busy. What do you think? You know, obviously you're inspired by a lot of real life events and everything. What do you think is inspiring you right now at this moment? And keeping you going.
Well, the book I have a new book that's going to be out in about 3 weeks, and it's set at the Bears Ears National Monument. And I think a lot of people who are concerned with ecology and global warming and cultural preservation and paleontology too,
yes,
they've really been watching this issue because it's been such an interesting debate and really such a seminal issue in terms of tribes stepping up and saying, hey, wait a minute, we have deep, deep roots in this place and we need to have a say about how things are managed. So I was really so happy to be able to think of a mystery that would happen in that area. So anyway, that book, it's called The Way of the Bear, and it'll be out the end of April. So that's been on my mind a lot. And
is that part of the Jim Chi and Leiphorn novels, or
it is Jim Chi, oh, Joe Leiphorn, and then Bernadette Manuelito. Bernadette, yes, was a character that my dad created a long, long time ago. And when he died, she was still kind of the sweet, young, not very competent officer who had a crush on her boss. And so when I took over the series, I thought, well, no, things have to change here. So now Bernie is one of the leading characters. Now she is a crime solver, just like the guys. And so in The Way of the Bear, basically, Bernie and Jim Chi are the two characters who drive the story. And there's some mention of Joe Leiphorn because he's like a national treasure. I can't just get rid of him. But most of the action happens with Jim and Bernie.
Very nice. Very nice.
Thanks. I thought so too. I feel like a new mom, you know.
Well, it's like, and like you say, it's a good point. And it's interesting you brought up paleontology. You know, it's not the same study, but I did study a lot of biology and other stuff in school, and just discovering just remnants of the earth and just finding fossils and that explain society better. You know, it's just such an underrated skill, and it's cool that you're portraying that more in your novels.
Well, thanks. You know, it was really interesting to do I love to do research. I think a lot of times when people think about fiction, they don't understand how much research you have to do, even though you're making up the story.
Even in fiction.
I have to have it grounded. So I did a lot of research about paleontology in Bears Ears. And that was one of the reasons that it was set up as a national monument. There are so many fossils that are unique to that area, and a lot of them that talk about how climate changed and how some animals were able to adapt and some animals went extinct. And so I think it really has a lot of resonance for us living now. So I was really glad to be able to include a little of paleontology in the story. And the other thing that was really cool, I feel like these characters are kind of my friends. Anyway, one of these characters is a paleontologist, and he has this wonderful skull that he's been, you know, studying and researching. So of course he's given it a name. So as I'm writing the book, I think, well, what would be a good name for this fossil? So I think it should be a woman, because it's like, you know, one of the mothers of, you know, so many other strains of life. So I think, well, I'll call it Mary. So then I'm thinking, well, maybe there are women paleontologists who've been named
right.
Mary. I do some research, and there's like five or six women who were really important in kind of tracing the evolution of life from, you know, one cells up to Tyrannosaurus Rex. So I was able then to, you know, slip their names in the book. And
nice.
It was too much fun. Thank you for letting me talk about this. This is the first time I've had a chance to talk about this book. Yeah. So you and I are right on the cutting edge.
Nice. Okay. As you were mentioning earlier, you know, it is cool how you have, again, just these accessible characters, and you're making your, not to say that your old man had any flaws with his characters or anything, but it's cool that you would enhance some of the ones that were underdeveloped and give them actual lines and everything, not just be people in the background with a, you know, throwaway line, you know.
it was a challenge taking over the series, because my dad wrote it for so many years, and so many people loved those characters, and, you know, loved it just the way he did it. But I thought, I could never be Tony Hillerman, you know, no matter how good a writer I am, I'm not him. So I had to think of a way to kind of make those stories my own. And I was lucky that he had created this Bernadette Manuelito character and then sort of left her in limbo there. Because that gave me a way to continue the stories, to be, you know, be true to the legacy that he had started, but also to, you know, dust it off and bring it up to the 21st century. So, exactly. Yeah, so I was grateful that he didn't do anything with that character and kind of left her potential to be.
Absolutely. I know you didn't have a personal hand in every say, given how there's a lot of Longmire actors on the adaptation of you and your father's Dark Winds novels, have you by any chance ever met Craig Johnson? Just as a curiousness. Okay. The Longmire.
Yeah.
Nice.
Because
there's such similar novels. And I always wondered who came first. You know, it was a chicken and the egg situation. It was like, what, did he come first or Hillerman come first? You know, I would like to have known what inspired either of them, because
yeah, Hillerman came first, then Craig. And it's an interesting thing. I used to do a writer's workshop in Santa Fe, and as part of that workshop, we would give a prize for short stories, and we did a contest with Cowboys and Indians magazine. And the second year we did the contest, Craig Johnson won the prize. And nice. It was called the Tony Hillerman Short Story Prize. And at that point, his very first book, A Cold Dish, I think it was like hitting the bookstores the next week. So, but he had some copies in the trunk of his car. So he and his wife drove all the way down from Wyoming to Albuquerque, and he got to meet my dad. And he said that was really a thrill to him, that my dad had been kind of a role model. So, yeah, so that was when I first met him. So
he opened the door and he built on it.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So his career has really blossomed. I love his books. And he's a nice guy, too.
That's lovely. And I also bring it up because there's apparently an upcoming Longmire Days, and they've been reporting it in a bunch of different Santa Fe and New Mexico newspapers.
That's right. That's right. Longmire Days. And like you said earlier, some of the characters who were in the Longmire movies are also in Dark Winds. So that's a really cool thing.
Yeah. My mother's a huge fan of Zahn, McLarnon, and the people playing the other deputies, and were interesting, especially because me and my late grandmother were big fans of the Chi and Lee Porn adaptations that were on like PBS Masterpiece Theater.
Oh yeah,
and
yeah,
so yeah, yeah. It was even more just intriguing. Is like, see, this is interesting. Wes Studi and Adam Beach adapted, brought these characters to life this way. Now they kind of did a little switcheroo here. Lee Porn's the smart one, and she's a little more arrogant, you know.
Right, right.
By the book,
right.
Hands tied. So I thought that was an interesting dilemma. It was kind of like in the heat of the night, you know, the movie versus the show, almost, for lack of a better comparison.
Yeah, yeah. I think I love the TV series. I think they did a really good job. And it's interesting, most people love it, you know, but the few negative comments I've received have been from people who like have read the stories on which those series were based, you know, three or four times. And so they say, well, you know, wait a minute, Joe Leaphorn was not a traditional guy. He was just a crusty old guy. And Jim Chi was the one who was spiritual and blah, blah, blah. And they've switched it in the movies, and how dare they? But, you know, it's entertaining, and I think it's true to the spirit of the stories, and that's what really matters.
Yeah, there were some serious, I mean, compared to other shows, I mean, I wouldn't expect anyone who isn't very progressive or considerate to watch this, but there were a lot of eschewins. There were some people who were watching it also because it was, you know, on AMC and looked kind of almost as edgy as some of those other Breaking Bad type shows, and ironically, coincidentally, they had some of the same villains also on this one. But I'm with you. I did see some complaints also on social media, and a lot of them were kind of baseless. One of them was like, oh, it's a whitewashed story, even though the entire writer's room is indigenous. This is like, so what are you looking for here? Is this clickbait? What's going on here?
Yeah, I agree.
Just ridiculous. If you're going to say whitewash, it better be legit, like someone's taking an outdated trope or cliche that's not the most accurate and doing harm with it. But come on, no harm was done here.
No, I think to the contrary. I think it would really give people, even people who had never read any of the Hillerman books, I think it would give them kind of a good sense of grounding in the Navajo culture, and kind of really respect for, you know, what the tribal culture is like. And the producers of the movie always there's going to be stuff that, you know, falls through the cracks, but they had a cultural consultant, you know, from the Navajo Nation who worked with them, and they had a language coach who worked with them. I know one of the other criticisms has been, well, people are speaking Navajo and they're mispronouncing things, but you know,
that's going to happen regardless.
Yeah, they're doing the best they can, and they're acting with integrity. So I really admire them. I think they've done a good job.
Yeah. I mean, they even brought in some of the same filmmakers who worked on the previous PBS adaptations. So you can't say this wasn't made by someone who didn't care about it. You know?
Right. And they had Navajo writers working on the script. And I don't know, there's one of the segments in the first series is about what's called a canalda, which is the coming of age ceremony for a Navajo girl hits puberty. And they did that so well. I mean, there's no verbal explanation of what's going on. It's mostly just the visuals. And it is so respectful and so.
Absolutely. The visuals are on point. Like,
yeah.
But what you guys. You and your father did so well in books, outlaying, describing the dusty desert, the corruption abound, and the unusual gritty mysteries. And here, you know, they can only storyboard it. And yeah, there are several shots where I'm blown away. And it kind of almost brings to mind the movie Eagle Heart. Same kind of dilemma based off actual events and similar, you know, fiction. You know, mirrors reality, you know, once again, lots of federal corruption and unusual, just foul play that was very hard to figure out for a while. And
yeah,
well, at the same time, like you say, a good use of describing the Navajo culture, and they pick some good people to play all three leads.
And I think, you know, there's a little bit of the supernatural in the first series. You mm-hmm. know, there's some, you know, references to witchcraft and putting curses on people. And I've heard some criticism of that. But in fact, I mean, that the whole belief in kind of evil supernatural stuff is in all cultures. You know, if you look at Christianity, you know, you could, I might get myself in trouble here, but certainly, you know, every culture believes there's bad stuff out there and we can't quite understand it, but we better watch out. And mm-hmm. I think, again, the movie did a really good job of integrating the Navajo beliefs into the story so that it doesn't seem just like, superfluous stuff. It seems like it really is part of how the plot is moving.
Absolutely. Have they invited you in to oversee the production every once in a while, or is it kind of?
Well, I wouldn't say oversee. They invited me to watch.
Gotcha.
Fun. I got to go out when they were filming a scene for the second season. And it involved A. Martinez, who was also in The Dark Winds. He's playing a county sheriff.
Are you allowed to say that much?
Oh, I don't know. Anyway. He and Jessica.
No, I love that man. I had the honor of working with him as an extra on Queen of the South. He was playing a crooked sheriff, and I made my mom so jealous. She won't ever admit it to me, but I know she's a big fan of his. And
he's a charming guy.
Yeah, he is.
It was really fun to watch him.
You'll love this story. I've heard several hysterical Longmire stories about him talking about different, just unusual, but amusing observations and humor. But like when I saw him on that set on Queen of the South, he was a delight. Like there was this featured extra, literally just a young adult, and he took him to the side and just showed him, like asked him where he wanted to be in the scene. Like gave him an option and he guided him. I'm like, see, that's awesome. Some people will just kind of sit there with just a grin, but not really offer any useful advice, and he was already schooling that guy. I'm like, see, that's awesome, that to see someone go the extra mile and make sure whatever talent that they're interacting with is comfortable, and even make a few other jokes, you know, it's like that's awesome.
So it was fun to watch some of the filming, and it gave me big appreciation for how many things can go wrong and how they have to, I mean, every detail counts. Yeah, it took them much longer to film that scene than it ever will for people to watch it.
Yeah. it could very well be, I hope they have some special features besides just the featurettes that play between bumpers for the show. We shall see. Right now it's pretty well ranked. Have you noticed how there's been some crossover between the other show, Reservation Dogs, which is also big indigenous drama?
Yeah. It's great to see that. And it seems like there's a lot more, I've been noticing a lot more indigenous writers who are writing mysteries. Mm-hmm. It would be great to, you know, to see some of their stories turned into movies.
Totally. When I talked to Emilio Rico, she was just guffawing because, like, she didn't recognize, you know, like half the cast, and then realizing, oh my God, you're in this, you're in that. And I was just working on that, and I didn't recognize you because you had blonde hair versus brunette hair. And it's funny how, not funny, it's intriguing how, again, we're just seeing some evolution in progressive storytelling. There's already one, a similar Navajo based culture show called Alaska Daily, which is based on some actual true crimes. And so do you feel like this production is kind of opening up just more Native American based storytelling a bit?
Oh, I do for sure. Yeah, I think it's really wonderful. I was so happy that they were able to find Native writers to work on the screenplay. I did a group conference call with some of those writers, and I was really impressed with how much time they had spent reading my books and Dad's books, and how they were really trying to make sure that they didn't do anything that would have been out of character for these for the characters in the book, even though, you know, movies are different.
We'll return after these messages.
Hello and welcome to Culture Shocked, the pop culture podcast brought to you by four aging millennials and our outdated opinions. Join us every Tuesday as we discuss movies, TV, games, and even music, new and old.
Dude, what do you think you're doing?
Are you seriously trying to record a promo without us right now?
Well, yeah.
Dude, you can't just do the promo by yourself. Who's gonna listen to that?
Yeah, and you probably haven't even told them that we're a pop culture podcast where we always agree on everything. For instance, the Sam Raimi trilogy easily being the best of the Spider-Man movies.
No. But I think we can all agree that Jaws is a classical masterpiece.
Nope, don't like that. But we do all agree that the sequel trilogy of Star Wars is the best in the Skywalker saga, right, guys?
That comment is so ridiculous. I don't even know where to
Anyways, that'll do it from all of us here at Culture Shock. Thanks for listening.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsey, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
We let things pile up in the DVR, we add them to our queues, we wait for the DVDs and Blu-rays. We time shift. The Time Shifters Podcast. Sci-fi, horror, fantasy, superheroes, comedy, action, film, television, maybe some not-so-current events. Find us on iTunes or at timeshifterspodcast.com.
Cool thing about Blind Knowledge is we are in multiple countries. We are worldwide all across the globe. We are in the US, we are in the UK, we are in Canada, Germany, India, Japan, we're in Australia, y'all. BlindKnowledge.com. Now back to the feature presentation.
Dragon Ball Z, One Piece, Naruto, all things that we love, all manga that were originally published in the legendary magazine Weekly Shonen Jump.
But not every series can run for 300 chapters and have a hit anime. This is David.
This is Jordan.
We're the hosts of Shonen Flop. Each episode we look at manga that ran in Jump that didn't quite make it.
We discuss what it did wrong, what it did right, how the series could have turned itself around, and ultimately, was it a flop or not?
Run all your favorite podcast apps, and you can find us at shonenflop.com.
Keep on flopping, floppers.
They're bound to have some differences that hopefully will make it even more entertaining than when people just read the books. Because they've got more elements to work with. But yeah, I think it's great. I hope it continues.
Absolutely. One can only hope. Altogether, just a little backtrack for you. Once again, yeah, your like great mother was also a school teacher. I can relate to that. That happened to be questions of my mother, grandmother, as well as great grandmother. Coincidentally, my mother also got into journalism, and It seems to be a similar kind of trait. And you had yourself that display of that. Would you say that your mother encouraged you to pursue a scholarly kind of background, or were you kind of more just that just happened naturally?
Oh, no, she encouraged me. She often said to me, she said, you know, it's no matter what happens, no matter who you fall in love with, no matter if you have children or not, you always have to be totally prepared to support yourself. My mom had been, she had been accepted to a very prestigious, her major was microbiology. And so she got her BA, and then she got a fellowship at University of Oklahoma with a very prestigious program to go on for her master's and her PhD. But then she met my dad. You know, he was home from World War II, and instead got married and then got a teaching certificate. And so then was a teacher. She also was an inspiration to me because she was such an avid reader. She, after she died, I was in charge of, you know, kind of clearing out things that they had. And I bet it was 50 little notebooks, you know, like the kind that fit in a pocket. And each one, every page was the name of a book, the date she'd read it, the author, and like two or three paragraphs, not just a plot summary, but, you know, this book is in California and he talks about orcas. But he doesn't talk about, you know, their social behavior and how they're in pods. And if he'd done that, that would have made the story stronger. I mean, it was really interesting, kind of, you know, analytical thinking about all those books. So I think when my dad was lucky enough to marry her, he not only found a wonderful, generous, big-hearted woman, but he found somebody who was an excellent, excellent editor because of everything that she'd read. So I think
Lucky. He was fortunate.
He was blessed. Yeah.
Did she... And so was she.
I mean, they were married more than 50 years and they really loved each other. And I think their relationship was kind of a good example to me as I was growing up about, you know, what things you need to worry to fix and what things you can just say, that's just who he is. And I love him anyway. So.
Nice.
And I tried to bring some of that into my characters too. I hadn't ever thought that I would be, you know, writing that kind of, I thought I would be writing about, you know, things blowing up and catching on fire. But part of writing any series is the relationship between the characters. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So well, another backtrack to an earlier comment. Did your mother, since she studied some of the geology and everything, get you interested in paleontology?
Yeah, paleontology and biology and botany, all of that stuff. Yeah, she also was a meteorologist. We had a little weather station in our backyard, and she'd get up every morning and, you know, check, see if there'd been any moisture and check the barometric pressure. And yeah, she was quite an amazing person.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Have you been very rewarded by some of the public speaking events and book club events you've been to?
Yes. You know, it's a funny thing. Being a writer, I think any kind of creative work is such a schizophrenic life because most of my time, it's just me with my imaginary friends, you know, and then I get up and have dinner and go to bed and talk to my dog and, you know, talk to my fiance. But mostly it's a very focused, solitary life. And then all of a sudden the book comes out. And then the Rotary is looking for a free speaker and libraries are looking for free speakers and there's conferences. And yeah, it's sort of like that time with real people kind of recharges my batteries before I have to go back to the cave of solitariness and, you know, work on the next book.
Right. You got time to actually, you know, breathe for a minute.
Yeah. I think though some writers really are very introverted and it's hard for them to make that switch. And it was hard for me at first, but I think then I realized everybody who comes to those events, they really want you to succeed. You know, they're there because there's something about the characters spoke to them. And so they're hoping for the best, kind of like, you know, fans rooting for their sports team. So
that's a really lovely point because there's just, it seems like anytime there's bickering between an author and their fans, it seems to be just more of a sci-fi horror fantasy kind of thing. That's where you get a lot of the toxic fandom. And it seems like anything that's just like a straightforward and edgy, you know, drama or mystery, it seems to be kind of more for kind of like the TV crowds and the laid back book clubs, the ones who already want to be just very collected, very positive thinking. And that's a blessing because you don't really have to worry about as many guys who just, you know, are sour grapes.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, like I was saying, I did, you know, I got some blowback for the changes that they made in Dark Wind.
But it was going to happen anyway. Yeah.
And I get people who say, oh, there's so many typos in this book. You know, I'm really embarrassed for you. But, you know, what can you? Yeah. I say, oh, thank you.
Typo. Yeah. The world must have died because of two typos. And otherwise, solid read. Yeah. It's amazing. We had someone comment on one of our podcasts, and he felt the need to say the same statement five different times. It's like, thank you. That contributed nothing. Glad you listened to the first 5 minutes and claimed we derailed. Instead, listened to the whole discussion. But whatever. You can't be annoyed by stuff like that. And given how the book industry kind of keeps changing a bit and people are now self-publishing, do you have some other tips and tricks for still rising authors?
Yeah, I would say you really need to think of it as a job. Yes. I mean, you need to have the discipline.
Don't do it for fun. Make the fun be part of the job.
Yeah. I mean, it is, particularly when you're starting, it should be fun because you're probably not going to make any money for a long time. Yes. So, but you know, you do need to look at it as
have a job. Family and a secondary job. Yeah.
Yeah. And you need to be, it's kind of an interesting dilemma. You need to kind of let your creativity go forth, particularly when you're working on a first draft. But at the same time, you need to be critical of yourself enough that you don't, that you're sure when you finally show it to somebody else, it's really the best it can be. So exactly. It's an interesting balancing act of, you know, giving your creativity and all your wild ideas free rein and then pulling them back and fine tuning it and doing all the editing you need to make sure that it's really, really your best work.
And much like script writing, realizing kind of the hard way, hey, this is a great idea, but this should be in the next five sequels. It shouldn't be in this particular outing.
That's too right.
Much. That's right. Well, opens up five more plot holes that you don't need to answer right now.
Yeah. Actually, that's an issue. I'm finishing up my next book, the one that'll be out in 2024. And it's longer than it needs to be. And part of it is there's a couple really, ideas in there I really like, but I think I'm going to have to get rid of them because they're not quite fully developed. And to fully develop them is going to be adding another five chapters.
You might foreshadow them as opposed to introducing them.
I think I'm going to put them in a special file to save for later. We'll see.
Absolutely. Well, that is a lovely update. And I'm glad that you got straight to the heart of the matter of, you know, just nothing is, you know, a sure thing until you're in the thick of it and you want to, you know, pursue this career path and what have you. And
yeah,
I'm just glad that you're comfortable in your skin. You're loving what you're doing and you're keeping the world that others love alive and well.
Well, thank you. You know, I hear that from people just this year. This was a funny thing. Two fans contacted me, but one of them was a hospice nurse. And she said she had a person who was really wanting to read my next book, but she wasn't sure she'd make it till April. So I sent her an advance copy. And the other was a woman whose mother was dying. And it was kind of the same thing. She said, oh, my mom's read every one of your books and blah, blah, blah.
It is the kind of comfort food. There's just something about it. It just, even though there's grim material, you're able to just kind of put ounces of humanity in it. There's something about it.
Yeah. It was sweet. I had never had those kind of conversations before. Anyway, then the one who wrote and tapped on for her mom sent me her mom's book, which was about her mom growing up on the Navajo Nation back in she lived there for 30 years from 1930 to 1960. So
this really hit, impacted her heart and just made her just re-examine her heritage. See, that this is what culture does well. You know, we've had annoying fans complain about social commentary and it's like, well, this is how we make points. This is how we make it realistic. This is how we contrast it with today's reality. It's interesting to have to re-explain to people, this is only just how fiction works. You got to be inspired by reality in order to do a good story.
Right, right. And part of fiction is putting yourself in somebody else's skin.
And it resonates.
Writing as a guy, I mean, you know, writing as a kid, it's like, yeah, I can do it.
Yep.
And if people don't like it, they don't have to read it.
Bingo. It seems like it's the oldest trick in the book. It seems like, I won't name names, but I've encountered people before who wanted to play the blame game. And it was kind of, it's just mixed because it's like, why does there have to be a scapegoat? Why not? There is no one. No one's in trouble. You got a problem and you should work on you. any other upcoming events you'd like to promote before we go?
Oh, well, thanks for asking me. I'm going to do some events for my new book, The Way of the Bear. And if people just go to my website, Ann Hillerman.com, they'll see them all there. I'm doing a signing at a Poison Pen Bookstore in Scottsdale, which is a great, they specialize in mysteries.
Oh,
and
lovely.
She has like old ones and new ones and supernatural ones and historical ones. And it's a really lovely store if people are in Arizona. But she also has a good website if people want to order from her. She's been a big supporter of all of us mystery writers. And her name is Barbara Peters, and I'm one of her big
Barbara Peters. Okay. We will check her out.
I bet you if you asked her, she might even be on your podcast. She's full of opinions, and she's very articulate.
I'd love to. And I also got to applaud you for taking your old man's name and creating the writer conference, as well as creating a prize in his name.
Thanks.
Is there any expansion happening at that conference?
No, I had to put that conference on hiatus because now I'm spending so much time writing my books.
Okay.
But we'll see. It's not, we kept the name. I had a wonderful business partner who worked with me. So, you know, it could be that, you know, I'll be ready to do it again in a few years.
Nice. You used to be a restaurant critic. What's the last great restaurant you were at? Where you were like, those guys, they did their homework.
Oh, it's a restaurant. It's south of Tucson. Let me see if I can remember the name. It's an Italian restaurant. Well, I can't remember.
Those darn Italians, man.
Why
are they so good at their job?
I had this antipasto salad that had like three kinds of olives and pepperoncini and salami and cheese. And
was it a mom and pop store or a pretty big chain or?
It's mom and pop. That's what I love. Oh, the owner was there. His daughter was there doing her homework.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Tell you what, I will send you the name of it. Maybe
okay.
next time you're out, you can eat there.
Wow, wonderful. I'm happy for you. Keep soaring. Keep skyrocketing.
Thank you. You too. This has been really fun. I've enjoyed it. And I appreciate you reached out to me several times and I was always too busy. No, I appreciate your persistence.
It's part of the deal. You got to be patient with this. I've seen so many. Between you and I, I don't know that between you and I were recording, but you know, I would see some podcast guys or people do behind the scenes stuff get impatient with certain events. And it's like, chill, take a walk, stop playing the blame game. Again, people want to instantly kind of lose their nerve. And it's just like, well, you're not helping yourself. You're not helping anyone else. You're indistinguishable for those who are cranky and disorganized. So don't join that crew. Just chill.
No more cranky.
It'll happen when it happens. And I was like, I'm just grateful I could talk to this unique individual. So
that's right. It was worth waiting for. Thank you so much.
Anytime. And once again, for those who want to find Ann Hillerman, you know, her website's always updated and got a wonderful design. And once again, just be on the lookout for the new novel.
Great. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Bye now.
Godspeed to you.
Thanks. Same to you.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a Jacked Up.